देशावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Okay, so then continuing with Bhakti Sandarbha, Adhyayana 1, Adhikarna 2, worship of the demigods is condemned. So page 44, the end of Anucheta 19, Jiva Goswami continues. As well as worship of Shiva, Pitris, and Brahma are also rejected. However, worshippers of Vishnu do not criticize the devatas, right? So this whole point is that it's a very, it's not just a general rule of morality that we don't criticize the others for their worship. It's a matter of purity of the heart, that the devotees don't criticize others for what they're doing. Because we see here is that they're following Shastra and this and that, but at the same time as they themselves are not interested in worshiping the demigods, because why would you, right? It means if the purpose of karma is to get you to jnana, and the purpose of jnana is to get you to upasana, and the purpose of upasana, worshiping the demigods, is to bring you to worship of Vishnu, then if we've already come in contact with this worship of Vishnu, and been given this worship of Vishnu on the platform of pure devotion, then why would we be interested in anything else? And it's not that all these other things, you know, they're good, they're fine. No, it's such a shastra, so people are following, so they get regulated, they have guru, they follow the shastra, they have their regulation. And that way, that's good. And so it works for their position. But at the same time, is if you have the opportunity to take, you know, what is the, you know, the natural progression that all these other processes are for, then why wouldn't you take it? That's why Krishna is saying, give up all other religions, surrender to me. So we see that surrender unto Krishna then is following that aspect of the highest form of upasana. So it's not anymore just religion, it's sadharma. So you're giving up the aspects of taking dharma and making them as the prominence, and making them secondary, and making the primary or the sadharma as prominent. It doesn't mean we see Arjuna doesn't give up being a kshatriya and performing his duties. That continues. But it's no longer that his goal is to be the nice guy and to be considerate of all the relatives and not disturb anybody and, you know, like that. His goal is to please Krishna. So therefore, now the secondary religious principles of dharma, then they are seen in context of how they are serving and pleasing Krishna. So that's it. So what you're giving up is not the performance of religious activities. It's giving up the idea that these religious activities are separate from Krishna, and therefore replace the primary religion, which is pure devotional service. So then it's a matter of, okay, so then since pure devotional, serving Krishna and pure devotion is actually the dharma, then these other dharmas, then which are favorable for serving Krishna and pure devotion, those naturally remain. And those that aren't, they're unnecessary, then those are the ones that are stopped. But what you're giving up is taking them that these are important. Just like the person gives up, let's say, money. It doesn't mean he doesn't have money, but he gives up chasing money as the sole goal of life, you know, or he gives up sense gratification. Doesn't mean that he doesn't eat and you know, smell the flowers and stuff like that. It just now he gives up doing that for his own purpose, but now he only does these things, engages the senses in connection with Krishna. So that's the idea, because otherwise on the material platform, then it's thought, oh, they give up all religion. So that was used by, I think, which is interesting, the Smarta pundits, I think, in Indonesia, to keep us out of, or Singapore, to keep us out of, no, I think it's Indonesia, keep us out of Indonesia, is that we're giving up religion. And so therefore, then we're irreligious. But it's no, you're giving up anything but pure devotion to the Lord, you know, and being a monotheistic group of individuals, then they should understand this principle. But unfortunately, if you look at it from a materialistically influenced view, then you can then think it, if you give it up, means that nothing's happening at all. So you take up this, you know, impersonal or actually voidist idea that if you give it up, it doesn't exist anymore. No, you give it up as the main thing. And then it's only engaged how much it does support the real main thing. Does that make some sense? So seeing that people are on a progressive path, that's good. But at the same time, it's still not recommended as the thing. If you have the opportunity, like for devotees, they're going to discuss about the higher levels. And if they see someone's not interested or anything, okay, then you just leave it alone. And then whatever they're doing, you know, so that's better than nothing. But if the opportunity is there to express it, then you would try. Does that make sense? Yes, please.
It's also nice. I was thinking you quoted that verse, Sarva Dharma Paritya, and then Krishna, when he says give up something, he immediately offers what we should do, and that is worship him as a person in surrender to him. That's what it means. So it's right there, but we have to be sensitive enough to see that.
Yes, because the thing is if it's simply just rules, then the best you can get is that of opulence. Because rules, he's the rule maker. So then naturally he's the supreme, the topmost. And so then he is the topmost, then becomes, you know, the natural position of worship, the worship Lord. So as you're pointing out there, you have to have that subtlety that it's about him as a person. So it's about giving up everything else for him as the person. It's not a rule as such. That's why you're following it. You're being pointed out that if you worship the person, the supreme person, because of him as a person, that will give the highest benefit. You know, but it does worship for even those on the level of majesty, because you give up everything else because he's God. And so therefore being God, therefore giving up everything to just worship God and therefore do things that are pleasing to God, they get to that. So they'll catch in one point some aspects of the subtleties, but they don't necessarily catch the whole point of just him as the person. That's what you're giving everything up for. It's not because he's God. He's just, you know, being God, he's of course the most nice person, but it's about him being the most nice person. It's not about his position and his authority. So it does work for anybody who's Vaishnav. And at the same time, then it's going to bring about that also that subtle distinction of service to Krishna and Braja, and that mood of the Braj Basis without any karma jnana. Because karma jnana and upasana of the demigods, this is on the material platform. It's within dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. It doesn't go outside of that. So it's only when you're dealing in pure bhakti that it goes beyond this. So then only it becomes pure devotional service. So that it has to be appreciated so even others in other religious processes, then there's no problem that they're worshiping the Supreme Lord, but they can improve the quality if they're giving up these ideas of karma, jnana, and vipassana. They're just engaged in worship of the Lord because he's the Lord. I mean, as a person, but at least because he's the Lord, and giving up all other things, the endeavor for, all the different material things. They make their endeavor, let's say, as family persons. They're going to make their endeavor and their occupation, that whatever comes, they'll be satisfied with. And so it's the performance of their duties to please the Lord. If they go beyond that, then it goes out of balance. So then one can appreciate even others are doing. Yes, it's good. But at the same time, as you have to see, is that pure devotion. That's the real thing that's being given. So even that point of Sarva Dharma Parityaja could be a nice basis for even discussing with those of other religious systems, because this is what you're trying to obtain. Anucheda 20. A person with material desires can worship Vishnu. Why does he worship the devatas? Rajas tamaf prakritayas sama shila bhajanti vai pitri bhuta prajeshadin striyaishwarya praje sava. Desires of progeny and power along with wealth, having natures of rajas and tamas, corresponding to the natures of their deities, worship the Pitri, Shiva, Brahma, and others. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. Right? So, because they want progeny of power, then they start worshiping anyone else. So, anybody who's worshiping the demigods and all that, you know it's for wealth, power, you know, progeny, you know, because of the aspects of the nature of passion and ignorance. It's just a given. It's not because of pure devotion. And so someone may say, yes, I'm not on that platform, but that's not an excuse. You have to understand that the soul is on that platform, whether our consciousness is on that platform. So we make it look like this conditioned nature that we have is actually the nature of the soul, of us proper. No, this is just polluted consciousness. The soul is more brilliant than the sun. It's never, never contaminated. But because of consciousness, even though we're not contaminated, we're identifying. It'd be like if you took a rich person because he's hanging out with people who are poor, he starts identifying as a poor person when actually he's not. But because he identifies that way, then that's how he's going to be acting. He'll act as he's poor. So in the same way is that sometimes we say, oh, no, but that's so far away. It's not, you know, I can't come up to that platform. It's this, that. But then who are you? Are you the soul or are you this conditioning? Right? They'll say, well, not the body, you know, but the, you know, like this. But that means it's simply the consciousness is polluted. So therefore, by association of the pure devotees, then one can come to the platform of pure devotion. That's the only process, you know. So chanting Hare Krishna and hearing Bhagavatam, the association of devotees, worshiping the deities, living the Dham, all that in the association of devotees can bring you to that platform. So sometimes he says, oh, I can't do that, so I'm going to choose a lower level. But this is also a lack of understanding the philosophy. It's a shortcoming in that they're identifying themselves with the conditioned nature when they're not. They're making a mistake between they, the soul proper, and the polluted consciousness that the soul may be in. So it's natural. All you have to do is change the consciousness. But here they're not changing consciousness, just, you know, in fatalistic kind of mood. Then they're taking it, oh, but I'm like this, I can't do anything, me lifetimes and all that. But the point is then why waste it? If it's going to take lifetimes, even you're saying that, why are you going to waste it worshiping demigods and other than going for karma and jnana? Because it'll just slow things down. You know, if you want to speed it up, then do it like this, you know. And if that mood is there, then it's Krishna. He's the one who gives the liberation. Him being pleased, that's how it works. It's not because I am so, you know, I am good at or not good at my sadhana and all those things like that. It's the sincerity of the mood that you're trying to do and making your endeavor, you know, that is pleasing Krishna. And then with time, naturally, these things, you know, manifest so you can see them. Like that. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. There's no need to worship demigods of whatsoever category if one is serious about going back to Godhead. Right? Whatsoever category means none. You know, it's not that, okay, this one's, but not that. No, just none. And, you know, if one is serious about going back to Godhead, In the Bhagavad Gita 7:20 and 23, it is clearly said that those who are mad after material enjoyment approach the different demigods for temporary benefits, which are meant for men with a poor fund of knowledge. So that's what we were saying before, is that it's not a complete understanding. It's faulty. Right? We should never desire to increase the depth of material enjoyment. Material enjoyment should be accepted only up to the point of the bare necessities of life, and not more or less than that, right? So not more, because then you get distracted, and not less, because there's a false sense of renunciation. And then also, then, without properly engaging the senses, you can't maintain the body, you know. To accept more material enjoyment means to bind oneself more and more to the miseries of material existence. More wealth, more women, and false aristocracy are some of the demands of the materially disposed men, because he has no information of the benefit derived from Vishnu worship. By Vishnu worship, one can derive benefit in this life as well as in life after death. Forgetting these principles, foolish people who are after more wealth, more wives, and more children worship various demigods. The aim of life is to end the miseries of life and not to increase them. For material enjoyment, there is no need to approach the demigods. The demigods are but servants of the Lord. As such, they are duty-bound to supply necessities of life in the form of water, light, air, etc. One should work hard and worship the Supreme Lord by the fruits of one's hard labor for existence. And that should be the motto of life. One should be careful to execute occupational service with faith in God in the proper way. And that will lead one gradually to the progressive march back to Godhead, right? So the carefully execute one's occupational service means the service is done nicely, but it's also that one is careful to do with faith in God, right? And that in the proper way. How Krishna says is the process and reveals to the acharyas what is the way to worship the Lord through one's occupational duties. So one's performing those duties nicely, and one's performing those duties with the that faith in Krishna, that it's for him only that we're doing these duties to please him. And then everything else he's taken care of. That's what Krishna mentioned in the beginning, in the Gita, where this yajna, he's giving yajna so that you can worship him and progress back to Godhead, but at the same time as this yajna also produces whatever your necessities are. And so, because otherwise it's, we just worship Krishna, we give up everything else. No, that's not what it says. It says it has to be done properly. So proper means it has to be, first point of properly is that it's being done to please Krishna. Second point of properly is that it's you're doing the duties as best as you can, you know, within the context of how it's defined. You know, so both of those things. So it's not that by giving up the material dharma that the religious activities aren't being performed, right? They only take on the material quality when they're in touch with the external consciousness. But if they're in touch with the internal consciousness of serving Krishna, then they take on the nature like the internal potency. Then they give a different result. So it also is the impersonalism, you know, that conditioning of impersonalism that we'll think is that whatever you do, then spiritual must be the opposite. So if I'm doing all these duties and it's material, then spiritual means I do nothing of these. No, material means you do them for yourself. Spiritual means you do these duties recommended for Krishna. Right? That's the difference. So we see again that it's, but then you're saying, then it's, if you're leaving anything, it's just gross sense gratification. Then you're giving up, then you're doing nothing. This is coming from the Buddhists. This is coming from the Mayavadis. No, the actual point is that activity is given by Krishna. Krishna is a person. He's active. He interacts with his devotees in situations, you know, all arranged by Yoga Maya. And we can do the same. we've gotten ourselves here into these situations and these activities with results because of not connecting to Krishna. But as soon as we do, it's his potency. It will act according to the spiritual nature. It won't be externally have the eternal, it'll still give temporary results on the external platform, but on the spiritual platform, it will give eternal results. So you're just dealing with inferior nature that's in unconscious, but you're still getting the same spiritual result. You know, like that. So this overlap, these subtleties, then they become these can become a difficulty. But by association, by hearing from the acharyas, then we give up these kind of mentalities. Yes? No? Okay. Continuing with Srila Prabhupada. For material enjoyment, there is no need to approach the demigods. The demigods are but servants of the Lord. As such, they are duty-bound to supply necessities of life in the form of water, light, air, etc., right? Because they're serving the Lord. So if the Lord wants, they're giving. The Lord doesn't want, they're not giving. One should work hard and worship the Supreme Lord by the fruits of one's hard labor for existence. And that should be the motto of life. One should be careful to execute occupational service with faith in God in the proper way. And that will lead one gradually to progressive march back to Godhead. Lord Krishna, when he was personally present at Brajadhama, stopped the worship of the demigod Indra and advised the residents of Braja to worship by their business and to have faith in God, right? So their business is worship of cows, right? And service to the cows, service to Govardhan. And so then they took all the cows and all that and circumambulated Govardhan. You know, so, and so they're engaging their service in the service of the Lord. Worshipping the multi-demigods for material gain is practically a perversity of religion, right? So it's not proper. So you can't say, it fits in, people are just this and that, and, you know. No, it's just, the line is here. We worship Krishna, do everything in relation to Krishna. We don't worry about the demigods. Because as soon as you get into the demigods, how far do you go? You know, they'll start off because they're basically situated more in goodness, but there's this touch of passion and ignorance. So then they'll start off with a light way, with, you know, some light things of the demigods. But how far does it go? As we read before, that you have all these, you know, Kala Bhairava and Smashana, you know, Rudra and all these different kinds. That's where it can get to. It can go all the way to there. And so that means then what's not going on? So it has nothing to do with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. You can say, yeah, a little bit, this, that, but it's really going to slow you down, because that's what, you know, so many of the Hindus are doing. They're doing all these wild stuff, and then there's a little bit of Krishna in there. Janmashtami comes along, they go to the temple, take prasad. Jagadish Prabhu, yes.
So in a sense, when Krishna preached Karma Mimamsa to Nanda Baba, he was right, because if you perform your duties, demigods or no demigods, doesn't really matter, because this is the mechanism of material nature. We don't have to be personal with them. We don't have to worry about them, basically. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. It's just like if you have a relationship with the you know, the owner of the company, then you just interact with him. Everything else follows. You know? It means if you happen to bump into a demigod, you know, a temple, you know, we're respectful, but we're only interested in pure devotion. So we, you know, just respect them as a servant of the Lord, or we pray to them that we get pure devotion. But there's no interested in things other than that. So this point is that they say, oh, but it's improper to ask Krishna for those things. But it's more improper to ask the demigods, thinking that, you know, I don't want to ask Krishna, right? That's not nice. I can ask the demigod and that's cool. But that means you're thinking the demigod is independent from Krishna. That's already the second offense to the holy name. So how is that better? You know, no, it's that then you should be humble, because if I worship the demigod, I can keep my same pride and, you know, and I'm okay. But if you approach Krishna for the material, then you have to feel, okay, this is not ideal, but Krishna, you know, there's this and that, whatever's the reasons. And so then it maintains the humility, and from the humility, then that is the proper platform from which you can move forward in devotional service. But to be worshiping the demigods and think you're good, then that's not a strong position. Not at all. It doesn't even work for the demigods. You know? Yeah. You know, Indra, being confident of being a demigod, gets him in so much trouble. But if he's confident, I'm a servant of the Lord, then with these things go nicely. Something more, G.
Yes, I was thinking, I think Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he makes a comment that it's in a sense can be compared to a servant to a powerful king, who instead going to the king himself, goes to, you know, his ministers or whoever they are, and then asking some things instead of going directly to the king, and king on a personal level, he's, you know, he feels sad for that guy, because he could have come to him because they have a relationship, but somehow he didn't, and that saddens him.
Yes, because the personal means, you can say mechanically, yes, they're going to do it this and that, but then it's them making their choice, them going through all the motions, then so you lose the relationship. Yeah, that's a very good point, because it's about, you have a relationship with Krishna, so interact with Krishna. You can say, I'm embarrassed, but then that still doesn't make it okay to go somewhere else. Yeah. Okay. This sort of religious activity has been condemned in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam as Kaitava Dharma. There's only one religion in the world to be followed by one and all, and that is Bhagavat Dharma, or the religion which teaches one to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And no one else. 1-2-27 purport. Yeah, so just one religion, that's all there is. Krishna says there's one path. It's just a matter of which direction you're going on the path or how far you're going on the path. But there's only Krishna and all that. You can say there's all these different religions, but they're just trying to deal with different people at different times and different situations to bring them to the same position. You have one process like that. Jiva Goswami continues. They have natures similar to the Petris, etc., since they have natures of Rajas and Tamas. Because of similar natures, they are inclined to worship those Devatas, right? So, because the Devatas and like that have that aspect of passion and that. So they, therefore, and ignorance, therefore, then they are attracted to worship them. So that's all that you're bringing out, is that now we're, you know, saying passion, ignorance is all right for devotees to worship demigods or to get involved in all these things. You know, it means local issues. I heard one group, kirtan group, then they, before starting their kirtan, they were, you know, mentioning that, you know, about the holy name and all this. And so this kirtan is dedicated to those aboriginals, you know, on whose land we are performing this kirtan, that they have, you know, unceremoniously lost their land to, you know, the you know, terrible and horrible white Western men, you know, like that. What has that got to do with the kirtan? You were trying to get above the bodily conscious, and they're getting into those aboriginals, you know. It's kind of like, and where did they come from? You know, just like, I mean, at least what I heard is that, you know, let's say the aboriginals in America, you know, correct me, but I kind of remember it was like either 10,000 or 20,000 years ago, then walked across the Bering Strait and occupied the Americas. Is that what you learned? Yeah.
we didn't learn how they got there. We just learned that they were there. And they weren't actually human. They were savages. So it was okay to slaughter them all.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But at least from anthropology, then they came in. So that means, and who was there before that? Because we saw that when, Mahiravana lived in South America and he had that tunnel that went from India over there. So that means people were already living there. So these guys may have walked over at that time. Like that, you know. And then, so many things is wherever they are, you know, say the Aboriginals in Hawaii, like that. But they rolled in on a boat. They weren't there forever. You know, or the funniest one is in New Zealand. In New Zealand, you have the Maoris, right? So they're considered the Aboriginal people. But in history, everybody knows that before the Maoris floated down there on their boats, there was already a group of people living there called the Moahutas or the Moamoas. And when the Maoris arrived, then they had wars with them and killed them all off. So there's nobody left from the Moahuta tribe. So, you know, and now they're the Aboriginals? No, they were conquerors. They come in, at least, you know, the Europeans came in. They didn't kill all the Maoris. They may not have dealt nicely. They might have had wars and killed a lot of them, but they didn't kill them down to the last man. So now who's the bad guys here? Where are the Moahutas? You know, so this way, when you get into these things, is that where does it end? And ultimately, it goes back to Krishna's arranged these things. So again, you come right back to, therefore, just the only way you can deal with stuff properly is everything's dedicated to Krishna. You know, that's the only way you can actually deal with these things. So because of the passion and ignorance, therefore we're identifying with all these different groups. So we think that they're important because we identify with them. If we identify with them, we're fabulous. So therefore then anybody who's fabulous identifies with these people. So that can be anything here. When you're talking that, just like probably I think it's in the Bhagavatam, it's giving the point is that this renunciation won't get you bhakti, let alone karma. Right, so if you're dropping off these, one asset, anything below that. So if you're dropping off the demigods, that means jnana and karma are also dropped off. So if those won't work, then you can't do. But otherwise, then that includes everything down to political platforms, economic platforms, sensual platforms. You know that nowadays people get so absorbed in. So all that's got to go. It's just you have to stay with pure devotional service. Yeah. So end of Adhikarna 2, Riti. Having established the futility of demigod worship and the power of devotional service to Lord Vishnu in the previous Adhikarna, the next Adhikarna demonstrates how all the scriptures conclusively proclaim bhakti as the only process to attain the highest perfection. Right? So now we've shown how from you have a process to attain the supreme, and so worship of the demigods is not valuable in that process. You know, beginning stages, then you see for those who know nothing about devotional service, then it keeps them at least in line with that they can appreciate devotional service, but they actually can't give you. So therefore, if you look at it, then that means karma goes, jnana goes, upasana, the demigods goes, all this goes out. And all that's left is pure devotional. That only bhakti, that bhakti can give you the highest perfection. Nothing else. It absolutely can't. You know, and you can say, but we can work it in a little bit. But then unless you're working it in as the acharyas recommend, then how can you be sure that it will actually help, right? Because it can't be speculation. It can't be just, I feel like it. It has to be, you know, according to authority. What do the acharyas say? What does Prabhupada say? What do the scriptures say? And then accordingly, then you can look at those things. Yes? No? Because otherwise, nowadays, speculation. Give up religion. It means we follow these religions. We give up religion, and that we don't follow as it is given. So that leaves speculation. And then with that speculation, then we practice religion as we please. So it's a bit of a mess. Yeah. Adhyayana 1, Adhikarana 3, bhakti alone is the conclusion of all the scriptures, right? Nothing else is the conclusion. There isn't anything else. And that says all scriptures, not just Bhagavatam, or that's our opinion, or the Gaudiyas, yes, but what about? No, all. Adhikarana Prakashika. Having established that bhakti, characterized by the exclusive worship of the Supreme Lord, is the means for attaining the Supreme Absolute, the current Adhikarana illustrates how all the scriptures conclude bhakti as the only process to attain the Lord. Right, so bhakti is the means to attain, but it's not just a means, it is the means. It's the only means. Right? Because otherwise you can say, okay, it's that plus. No, it's just this. It's the means to realize the Supreme Lord, and it's the only means. There isn't anything else. The previous two Adhikaranas describe the glory of the process of worshiping the Supreme Lord Krishna and futility of the demigod worship by citing from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the current Adhikarana, verses are quoted from all the cantos of Bhagavatam sequentially and also from other Puranas and Upanishads to prove that the conclusion of all Vedic knowledge is to perform devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Right? So the Puranas and the Upanishads, right? Because the Upanishads are the philosophy. So if Upanishads are saying that, then you can't say philosophically. And if you say that the Puranas are saying that, then you have to see religiously and by practice of the, you know, the Upanishads, then this is what is done. First, the author cites from the remaining chapters of the first canto to prove that bhakti is the object of all the scriptures. Though it is seen that the Vedas indicate sacrifices themselves indicate worship of Vasudeva. Yoga scriptures indicate Vasudeva. Those whose scriptures describe asana and pranayama, they are the methods of attaining Vasudeva. Scriptures of jnana also indicate Vasudeva. Though the subject of those scriptures is jnana, the object of that jnana is Vasudeva. So subject-wise, they may be talking about those, but they're still trying to get to Vasudeva. And as we'll see, so there isn't the goal of all these is Vasudeva. So therefore, and that means devotion to the Lord and bhakti itself is its own independent process that includes the results of karma and jnana. So then why use karma and jnana when bhakti can give it directly? Thus, bhakti is the means, abhideya. This is also expressed at the beginning of the discussion between Sukadeva and Pariket. In the beginning of the second canto, Srila Sukadeva Goswami stresses the importance of performing bhakti by hearing, glorifying, and remembering the Lord, and condemns those who are absorbed in material life without striving to revive their lost relationship with the Supreme Lord. Sukadeva Goswami rejects other forms of meditation which are not directed to the personal form of the Lord. These indirect methods are prescribed for the materialist who does not possess loving disposition for the Lord, and they may get purified by meditation on the universal form. Thus, for the less intelligent beginners, impersonal meditation on the universal form will aid in gradually rising to the stage of realizing the greatness and sweetness of the Lord's personal form. Right? So one's attracted or attached to material energy, then seeing that material energy in the context as Krishna's energy and all that, then that's purifying. But we have to remember that that's a beginning stage because it's the person that you're trying to come to. So yes, I'm interested in this particular object. That object and Krishna's potency is there. That's why it's attractive because Krishna has the qualities and that we're looking for and that are manifest in that object. So it's through Krishna that I'm attracted. But I mean, it's Krishna I'm attracted to, but it's through this particular object. But we have to understand it's the beginning. We think the object itself has a value other than it's being able to carry something. Right? Just like you have a cup and I put something in it, a value. You can drink that liquid because the cup, but it's not about the cup. It's about the liquid. Because if it's about the cup, do we ever see instances where they just come out and get very high grade, you know, like say carved crystal, you know, glasses to everybody and that's it, and give them nothing to drink. And everyone sits around, oh, what a fine glass. Yeah, so good. Yeah, my grandfather, you know, used to talk, you know. No. And so therefore, the quality of the drink, then therefore the quality of the cup goes up. If it's just water, you don't have to give it in a carved crystal glass. But you increase the quality of what you're giving. Then you increase the quality of the glass. So the glasses rise is in proportion to what is being given in the glass. So that it's not about the glass. So yeah. Yes. Yes. So it has to be understood that using these other aspects are simply to bring one's focus back to Krishna. If you've forgotten Krishna, these are methods to bring you back to Krishna. But they themselves aren't the direct process of bhakti. That seeing its connection to Krishna, that's devotional. But the medium you're using, that is only has a value in as much as it's connected to Krishna. Right? On the other hand, bhakti yoga, characterized by hearing, glorifying, remembering, and worshiping the Supreme Lord, quickly purifies the polluted aim of life known as material enjoyment and takes one back to Godhead directly. It means you don't have to use these other methods. They're mentioned there, and they can be used if one finds oneself in that position. You know, like the impersonalists or this, they can use that and start to see how it's all coming from the person like this. And so they're starting with that impersonal pervasion and then trying to take that, how the Lord pervades everything, and then how that to get to the person. But once they get to the person, then they should just directly use the devotional and drop the, you know, worship of the universal form. Is that, yeah? Hence, there's no need for any other method of purification because bhakti automatically purifies one from all one unwanted desires. So simply by bhakti, then one can directly come to the pure devotional platform. You don't need these other processes, since the goal of all other processes is pure bhakti anyway. So why not just run with bhakti, since it's more efficient? It's better. It doesn't have all the, you know, cumbersome elements that the path of karma, jnana, and worship that David has had. Further, in the third chapter of the second canto of Bhagavatam, the sage Shonaka describes that the highest benediction of life is bestowed upon only those who perform bhakti to the Supreme Lord. The demigod worships get only temporary results, but by the association of pure devotees of the Lord, they can gain entrance to the process of pure bhakti and attain perfection. Those who are busy in materialistic life, I think it's do no good, right? Do no good to themselves or others. Or can do no good. The third canto presents it. So it's just like was mentioned before, is the devotee, even though he's come from the background of a chandala, then, but they've taken up the process of pure bhakti, then he can purify himself and purify, you know, his family and others. But that brahmana who is simply, you know, mechanically following all the rituals of the Vedas and that, but is not a devotee of the Lord, then he can't even actually purify himself, let alone his family or anyone else. So it's the bhakti that's the supreme aspect here. The third canto presents the statements of Maitreya Rishi and Lord Kapila, which establishes that the process of bhakti is supremely beneficial for all the jivas. In the fourth canto, right, you see he's going through, you know, he started off in the first canto, you know, with the second verse, after you, that aspect of the invocation, then you're going to say, what's this book about? What does it do? Who's it for? So then we see it's for developing pure devotion, and it's not for karma jnana. And so all those things and anything that's not related to pure bhakti is kicked out in the bhakti. Then you go through then the second chapter. Then you go through then the rest of the canto. Then now he goes through third and fourth. Like, so he's just taking it canto by canto to show that every canto is also saying this. Because otherwise someone can say, oh, but in here then this is recommended, that recommend. No, the point of all that is to come to the point of pure devotion. In the fourth canto, concerning the teachings of the Chatush Kumaras, a comparison is drawn between the results obtained by the practice of impersonal jnana and pure bhakti. Through this, it is established that the ocean of material existence can be easily crossed by only those who take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Through the process of pure bhakti, others only desire to cross but cannot actually cross. So they may have the desire, but you can't. Without bhakti, you can't cross, because crossing means you're crossing to the Supreme Lord. You can only attain the Supreme Lord if you have a relationship with devotion. Otherwise, how you'll attain? What will you do there even if you do? Also, through the instructions of Lord Shiva in Rudra Gita, it is confirmed that engaging in worship of the Lord by engaging one's mind in words and glorifying him is the best process, and all other processes of worship, such as performance of karma, are discouraged. Narad Muni, while instructing the Pachetas, affirmed that the only real value in this world is service to the Supreme Lord. Without the service of the Lord, all the processes such as the Shankhya, Jnana, Astanga, etc. are useless, because they don't benefit the living entity in attaining the ultimate perfection. Right? So even the Shankhya, if it's not seen in context of bhakti and in service to the Lord, it also then can't get you. It means it'll dismantle the material environment, and so it's going back to the primary creation. So that's creation. So that's as far back as you can get. You can get to that impersonal state, you know, that is there in the association of, Mahavishnu, you know, in the form of Mahakala, you know, so that that Mahakala Pura is that environment of the primary creation, you know. So going before that, then you get to that state that before material creation, but it's still within that context of beginning, middle, and end. Because one's absorption on the Brahman platform has a beginning when you start it. It has a middle when you're absorbed. It has an end when you decide, I want to do something other than just sit here and say I'm Brahman. So it's still within the Mahatattva. It doesn't go beyond. So other than bhakti, you can't get anything. You can't go beyond. It's just, it's impossible, because it doesn't have anything that's connected. In the fifth canto, the discussion between Maharaj Rahugana and Jada Bharat is cited to establish that, by the association of pure devotees of the Lord, one can easily attain pure devotion to the Lord. The seventh canto comprises the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj to the sons of the demons. Prahlad Maharaj instructs that the human form of life is very rare, and hence, from the very beginning of life, one should engage in the service of the Supreme Lord. Since even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection, any activity or duty which does not lead one to the performance of platform of surrender to the Lord is a waste of time and energy. So if it's not bringing you closer to surrendering to Krishna, it's a waste of time. Well, that's the only thing that's worthwhile. So one has to think, you know, you're going to worship these demigods, you're going to work, get involved in this guy. How is that going to bring you closer to Krishna? Because if it's not, it's a waste of time. If it is, then okay. But then you have to understand it's a beginning state, and it's not mature. It's not equal to pure bhakti. And so it must be given up. So this modern kind of thing where we're saying it, oh, you dress as a devotee or not, it doesn't matter, and it's all the same, and we're all one, and it's all, you know, like this. You know, this is not a Beatles song, you know. This is an endeavor for the absolute. That there is levels. There is. You can't say that's the same. Otherwise, then yes, we're going to bring out a chunk of gold, or we're going to bring out a pebble. And because they're all the same, I'm going to give you, who are saying it's all the same, the pebble, and I'm going to keep the chunk of gold. And that's just the way it's going to be. You know, and you can't complain. Right? If you make no distinction, then make no distinction. So that's the whole thing, is they make no distinction as long as you don't show up in a dhoti and tilak. Because if they do, they will discriminate you and throw you out. And that's not an exaggeration. Right? So this is the state they say is, oh, we're being the liberal ones, when they're actually being they practice religious discrimination, which no liberal person would agree to. But they claim that they're doing it out of liberalness, discriminating against those devotees who want to practice. So that means those people in the room who are coming are never going to see anything like that. They're never going to come to that. Because the whole point is why is it that person's been coming for years, still no tilak, still no dhoti? And they can't tolerate it. If you show up in it, I'm sorry, you can't come in. You're unwelcome here. Right? So this is the so-called liberal stance, is that they can't accommodate these things. Bhakti is the only process. So if you're not giving pure bhakti, then what's the point? You can say, oh, but people aren't up to that platform. We're just, all we can do is give them the mode of goodness. I would say on a good day, maybe you can say there's some goodness, but where is the goodness in this? Religious discrimination isn't the mode of goodness. Talking about the aboriginals and all that and respecting them and all that is not the mode of goodness. You can say, we're being nice and we're being good, but it's on the bodily platform of life because it belongs to Krishna. That's what it belongs to. The house belongs to Krishna. The land belongs to Krishna. The air belongs to Krishna. It all belongs to Krishna. We have to see it from that point of view. And if we're not, we're missing the point. And all these other things will not give you pure bhakti, as it's said here. Thus, bhakti alone. This canto also, continuing with seventh canto, this canto also elucidates Narad Muni's instructions to the Pandavas. Narad Muni describes that the Supreme Lord Vishnu is the essence of all Vedic knowledge and the root of all religious principles. Hence, without bhakti, there is no question of religious principles. The so-called religious principles devoid of devotional service to the Lord are only cheating. Thus, the actions of bhakti are included in the list of actions of dharma, using indirect methods to encourage materialists to take to bhakti directly later. The reasoning should be understood in other statements which list bhakti among other processes. Thus, bhakti alone is the conclusion. Right? Because all these others are there to take up bhakti. It's not that it's just one of the choices. It's the sad-dharma. Since all other processes of dharma are to bring you to sad-dharma, therefore, then, knowing that this is what's there, these are all the actions, then I do all these things in connecting with bhakti. That's what you're trying to get to. You're not trying to get to the point it's all right to do this or it's all right to do that, because one's resonating with those things, and that so that the mode of ignorance and passion that are there, that you're identifying with these things and think these are important, then belies the level that one's on. So to say that they're all equal then is very unfair. Nothing compares to pure bhakti. There is no other process, and there is no shastric way to prove that something else is equal. So therefore, one should stop trying to make things equal that are unequal. That was Lord Brahma's, explanation to the demigods. They were saying, okay, I have a banker. Because bankers are considered in the Vedic system basically the lowest of the low, because they're so greedy for money that they'll put people in debt their whole lifetime just so that they could get a little profit off of them every month. Like that. So they're saying, which is better? And a banker who's become a devotee, right? Or a Brahmin who's not a devotee. Because he performs all the wonderful activities and all that. So they were confused because they were saying, well, it looks like it's basically equal. But Brahma said, stop making things that are unequal equal. Says that the banker who is a devotee is way better than the Brahmin who is not a devotee. You mentioned the word they were using there was faith. So you can't make them equal, because it's all part of the process that is included in bhakti, and then say that aspect of that secondary principle or tertiary principle is now, you know, on an equal level with the primary, that would be foolish. It's all education. So therefore, whether in primary, you're in secondary, or you're in you know, undergraduate or quaternary, it's all the same. It doesn't matter. You know, it's like that. You finish third grade, you're as good as the PhD. You know, it's like, who says this? Except fools. Who says this? But then on the philosophical platform, we can speculate and say whatever we want because we've said it. It came out of my mouth, therefore it's sacred. But a burp also came out of your mouth. So now do we do burp worship? You know? Does that make sense? Hearing about the auspicious, okay. In the 11th canto, how are we doing on time? Oh, two more minutes. Hearing about the auspicious birth and activities of the Supreme Lord and singing his name, so it's described those activities, devoid of attachment to anything else, is the process of pure bhakti, right? So that's defining pure bhakti. Yes.
In the 11th canto, we didn't do that paragraph.
Oh, we didn't. Okay. In the 11th canto, the discussion between Maharaj Nimi and Navayogendras establishes the superiority of bhakti over all other processes. It is elucidated there that one obtains freedom from all fear only by the steady performance of bhakti, and thus bhakti is the greatest remedy for all material entanglements. So whatever is there, then bhakti is the highest. There isn't something else. So that's then what we see is that's going to be established in this Adhikarana. Is that that has to be established, and one has to have that kind of faith, that kind of commitment. Then what we can see is that all this will work very nicely. But if one doesn't have that, then one will be distracted by all these things, like you see as so many individuals are not being careful about the devotional service, and neither are they having an association that tells them to be wary of these things. And so then they get distracted by stuff that absolutely will not give them bhakti. And from the position of coming from a position of understanding the pure bhakti and trying to engage in it and then dropping down to something lower, it's kind of like, you know, no. We don't need it. Means we have to appreciate that the RSS, BJP, the Bajrang Bali Dal, they're all doing great work making more Hindus. It's not our business at this time. Oh, no, but we just want to elevate them to goodness. You know, at least that's something forward. It's like, are you even in goodness to elevate them to that? Do you even know what the mode of goodness is? Because they're presenting all these things that are based on passion and ignorance. They never said demigod worship was based on goodness. So therefore, we have to be very, very careful. Yeah, we're good. Yeah. Okay. So then we'll end today. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.